All right, everybody, it is time for another episode of the Crypto 101 podcast. But before we dive in to our awesome, awesome guest and conversation today, I want to remind you guys of two things. And the first one is that if you go to crypto101insider.com, you can join our private community. Here's where we have our model portfolio and all of our top picks. We also have Crypto 101 University, where we have hours and hours and hours of written and video content that explains blockchain and explains cryptocurrency in a very bite-sized and easy to understand way. And we have a weekly newsletter that goes out and quarterly state of crypto addresses that go out. There is just a ton of value packed into this every which way. So I want you guys first to go to crypto101insider.com today, if you haven't already. I also want to remind you guys that Pizza Mind and I recently just finished a book. It took 11 months of our lives to write, and we're calling it Crypto Revolution, Your Guide to the Future of Money. We walk you through this fascinating world of cryptocurrencies and blockchain, and it's part history book, it's part instructional guide, and it's going to really show you guys why cryptocurrencies are globally disruptive and how they're going to actually change in real life and in real terms the way that we buy and sell and even live. We include a bunch of how-tos on getting started with your first exchanges. We give you tips on how to safely buy and sell and store cryptocurrencies, as well as how do we evaluate potentially good cryptocurrencies. And the best part of the book is that we're giving it away for free. All you have to do is pay for shipping and handling. So go to cryptorevolution.com and pick up your copy today. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Crypto 101 podcast. Bryce here from sunny San Diego, having a great time. Just got off a nice lunch with my in-laws. And Pete, how are you doing over there in Austin, Texas? You're surviving?
I'm doing pretty well. Just got back from Colombia. Had an amazing time over there. Very jealous of their weather.
Yeah, you
it's
did the whole
cold,
Cosmos
rainy
first
every day.
Thing, huh?
I did. I went to Cosmoverse, and I was very, very impressed by so many long-term builders in this space that have conviction in their beliefs that weren't going to waver no matter what the West or the world, the West, there's a funny pun, no matter what the West or the rest of the world does, true, they're going to be building an ecosystem for their vision of the future. And well aligned with that mode of thinking is our guest today. Yes. Why don't you go ahead and introduce him?
So I was going to say, even before we hit record, I didn't even get a chance to run it by Sam. So I might run a risk of looking a fool here, but Sam, I don't know if you recognize me, but we had dinner in Japan in 2019, right after the Teams Summit. And this is when you were still with Theo and the boys over at Everpedia. And so as I was kind of, going through and studying Frax a little bit, I was like, I know this guy. He told me in January of 2019 that he was setting out to build a decentralized central bank. That's you, right?
I'm not yes, sir. Indeed. I wanted to see if you were gonna keep going, because you have photographic memory. It's amazing. And yeah, I do remember. My memory is probably not as good as yours, but yes, indeed. My history is before I was at Everpedia. It's a decentralized wiki encyclopedia on the blockchain. Theo is still running it. In fact, there's a new version of that coming out on Ethereum and Polygon, which is going to be pretty cool. But yes, indeed, you're totally right.
And that's what you're building now. I mean, literally, fast forward, what is it, 3-4 years, and now we have Frax Lend, we have Frax Shares, Frax Swap, and this is your brainchild, this is your baby. And I want to kind of dive into the deep end with you, because I think it's going to be a really great conversation that we get to have. But before we do that, I do want to hear a little bit about, just for the user or for the listeners that have never heard about you before, they don't know your background, let's just catch them up. I remember, UCLA and all sorts of stuff with
My name is Sam. I'm the founder of Frax, which is a fractional stablecoin. That's where the name comes from. My background is from UCLA. I got into crypto while I was in college around 2013-14 ish. Seems like a long time ago now. I originally remember hearing about it with a couple friends, and I kind of got into proof of work mining, because like that was kind of all there was to do back then, right? There was like Bitcoin forks or Litecoin forks, right? Script proof of work mining. I remember one of the first weeks that Dogecoin came out, I was mining that as well. And after college, I started Everpedia, as you said, with Theo and a lot of my other colleagues, and it's that's been going well. Like I said, they're releasing a new version out for Ethereum and Polygon. And in 2019, as you also photographically very well remember,
I don't know how I do it.
You're almost like a Wikipedia of like the crypto history.
This is and, like episode 450 or something.
Yeah, well, it's not every day someone says we're going to create a decentralized central bank.
Yeah, I remember the vision was so big and so bold. And I was just so impressed because, I mean, you guys were deep in the EOS team as well. And some of the smartest developers in the space. But anyhow, I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah. So with Frax, I think just part of my own view of the crypto ecosystem, because I've been through a lot of these cycles, seen a lot of this stuff, is I thought that stablecoins were going to be the one of the largest, if not the largest, you know, part of the crypto ecosystem. And one of the things I always say that I think resonates with people is I think there's $3 trillion parts of cryptocurrency. And one of them is Bitcoin, the other one is Ethereum, and then the last one is stablecoins. And what I mean by that is I think Bitcoin represents kind of the ethos of crypto as uncensorable, scarce digital asset, right? That kind of entirely opened Pandora's box for cryptocurrencies, right? It just started pretty much everything, right? And Ethereum started the concept of, you know, Turing complete general computation around kind of a shared state ledger or shared state, you know, computer, right? And that was, in my opinion, as revolutionary as Bitcoin itself. It's a multi-trillion dollar vision of crypto in the future. And I think the last one is, you know, non-custodial, truly decentralized, uncensorable, stable currency. My personal belief and kind of what my formative views are that like motivate me is I don't think that fixed supply assets like Bitcoin or like Ethereum, right, are going to be the best use of a unit of account or currency. I think they're going to be incredible technologies. They're digital assets. They're good investments, right? Like I'm clearly saying they're multi-trillion dollar market cap potential in crypto. But I think that there needs to be currency, right? There needs to be, and by currency, I mean something that keeps your purchasing power and standard of living stable, right? And what do we care about in terms of standard of living, right? We're human beings. We care about food, energy, medical care, rent, right? All of these things, entertainment, all of these things, right? And like now there's a lot of collective consciousness and awareness of like, that's basically the CPI basket, right? Which is what the dollar should be tracking, right? But in terms of, you know, that kind of ideas, that wasn't that popular. Like you're saying that
yeah, idea nobody was talking about this. Yeah. Nobody exactly, wanted to be in stable coins at that point. Everybody was like, stable coins are useless. Who wants to be in the dollar? If you want, and because the applications weren't built yet. I mean, so stable coins had no kind of place to go. It was like, you either in Tether, you're in, I mean, USDC wasn't even a thing back then.
Yeah, and like also just like the word DeFi wasn't really a thing in 2018 or 19, right? It was like the bear market after the ICO craze and things like that, right? And I think that's what really motivated me to get into the kind of stablecoin space and the essentially the stable currency space as of part of crypto, right? And I still think and I think people are starting to finally agree with me that the $3 trillion market in crypto is stable coins, right? And so you could cast a wide net around that, whether it's, you know, well, is it the dollar pegged stable coins mainly or no? Is the dollar kind of you know, like former generation of unit of account? Is there going to be a new unit of account that's like going to be this century's kind of like dollar? There's obviously a lot of debate and ideas about that, but just the general concept of stable currency on chain is as important, in my opinion, as Bitcoin and as Ethereum, as like just a foundational concept. It's a $1 trillion idea, and so that's why I always think it's like top three things. And so going into it about Frax, Frax is what I call a fractional stablecoin. And that's where the name comes from, Frax. And the idea behind it is that it has multiple stability mechanisms. Before Frax, there was like fiat coins, and then there was also MakerDAO's DAI stablecoin, right? Which was over-collateralized on-chain. You, in order to mint DAI, you had to put like, you know, $2 of ETH, you know, if you mint one DAI, right? Or if you want to mint like 1,000 DAI, you have to put up like $2,000 worth of Ethereum, right? And if the price of Ethereum slowly goes down, right, it gets taken from the smart contract, liquidated to buy back DAI to always keep the price generally stable around a dollar. We thought like stable coins on chain should be more like capital efficient, meaning like there's different ways to actually generate Frax. There's different ways to keep it stable, like protocol own liquidity.
Yeah, no single point this of failure kind of, there.
The huh?
No single point of failure there.
Exactly. Yeah. No single point of failure, but also like a mixture of different ways to expand the money supply, right? And so one of the main criticisms with like over collateralized models is basically this lack of ability to increase the money supply, right? When there's actual demand for currency, right? If you think about it, there's literally the only way to generate an over-collateralized stablecoin is either by, you know, wrapping it with a fiat coin, right? Or by creating leverage for ETH, right? Over-collateralizing ETH and generating DAI. And so basically, we thought of these different kinds of modules and mechanisms to keep Frax stable, such as protocol and liquidity and curve and Uniswap, algorithmic parts of the supply, which is like increasing and decreasing the amount of Frax in the open market by backing it with partly FXS, and also just doing a lot of protocol lending, right? Which is the same thing as kind of lending Frax into Aave, Compound, all these different things. And recently, you know, we launched our own decentralized lending market, FraxLend, which is powered by a lot of Frax stablecoin lending. So that's kind of the background there, and things are good. Things are growing really fast, and there's a lot of stuff going on. So a lot of people sometimes say, oh, it's so hard to keep up with everything. There's like FraxLend, FraxSwap, there's Frax stablecoins. There's also the FPI stablecoin, which is one of the first stablecoins that's pegged to the CPI, right? That basket of consumer goods. So it's essentially an ecosystem, and I actually like to call it more of an economy rather than an ecosystem, because I think if you're trying to basically measure the usefulness of a currency, right, how much it's used and things like that, it's more important to have an economy that has debt denominated in it, that has savings denominated in it, that has people holding it, rather than kind of, you know, saying it's an ecosystem or like there's a lot of, you know, community and things like that. Because you can actually just concretely measure an economy, right? Like in terms of either GDP or debt denomination, volume and things like that. And I like to call it the Frax economy, right? Instead of the Frax ecosystem. But yeah, there is a lot of things going on, just like there's a lot of things going on in a diverse economy and ecosystem. So things are good.
Love it.
What are some of the ways users can participate in this economy?
Yeah, so the main way is Frax is extremely DeFi native. And so we don't do anything off-chain in terms of like any, like the protocol does not hold any assets off-chain. It doesn't do any like market making off-chain and things like that. For example, you know, Terra, which everyone probably knows, was like famous for doing a lot of these like market making things on centralized exchanges and these kinds of things. Frax doesn't do any of that. Frax is more similar to MakerDAO in that everything is on-chain. It uses smart contracts. You can see where the collateral is, where the assets of the stablecoin are. And so the best place to really do kind of low risk participation, like staking, yield farming and things like that, you can do that in our own gauges, which are these like farming contracts. You can do it on Curve and Convex. These are really big parts of the Ethereum DeFi ecosystem. Frax has a really large presence there. And those are just kind of the ways to get started, right? Like if you have Frax stablecoins or other dollar peg stablecoins, there's a lot of Frax pairs. You can stake, you can get yield, especially in this kind of market. And, you know, obviously none of this is an investment advice or anything, but they're fairly low risk in terms of they're just stablecoin staking, and they're in Curve, right? Curve is a blue chip DEX in there. But again, after everything that's gone on in both the industry and the greater financial system, you know, macroeconomically. None of this is investment advice. It's still pretty risky, but you could get started on yield farming. You can take part in FXS staking. We have a system called VFXS. And generally, if you just go to actually app.frax.finance, it's a really, really comprehensive front end, you know, dashboard system. It shows staking yields. It shows different places you can trade Frax, LP Frax, earn yield in Frax and FPI stablecoins and everything like that.
Has this been easier or harder to accomplish than you originally thought it was when you set out?
I think it was definitely about as hard as I thought, but not for the same reasons.
Let's hear it.
So yeah. I mean, I don't think anyone that says, "Oh, we want to create like a $1 trillion stablecoin in the crypto market," thinks it was easy, but for different reasons. I think one important thing is that there's this thing called the stablecoin trilemma. And this has been a pretty hard thing to tackle effectively. And this is actually one of the largest challenges. So for people that don't know, Vitalik coined the term blockchain scaling trilemma a while ago, which basically means there's this kind of triangle where you always have to seemingly give up one leg of the triangle to scale a blockchain. And all three parts of the triangle are really desirable for a blockchain. It's like decentralization, uncensorability, right? Basically like mutability and security, right? Security means like you can actually be sure the new blocks won't get rolled back and things like that, right? And so the idea behind Vitalik's scaling trilemma is like, if you're trying to scale a blockchain, you can like make the blocks bigger or something, but that makes it less decentralized, right? Because no one can run nodes. Or if you make it more decentralized, then the throughput and the actual scalability goes down, right? So you can only have like two out of these three. There's a stable coin scaling trilemma, which is basically like it's like decentralization on one end, collateral on the other end of the triangle, and at the top it's like the peg tightness, like the resiliency of the peg. And the idea behind that is like if you have
like the peg, meaning the stable coin is going to remain pegged to $1 or €1,
exactly,
or
like
one
peg
inflation adjusted a dollar or something,
exactly, like peg performance. So you have this triangle for stable coins, which is like peg, collateral and decentralization, right? And and the idea behind it is like it almost seems like you have to give up one of these things, because if you have all decentralized collateral, right? Like for example, LUSD does, Liquidity, right? Also like Terra kind of did, because it was technically another, you know, crypto token and things like that. Usually at best, you can get it to kind of LUSD, which wobbles a couple cents around a dollar, or Terra, worst case, it just implodes and
goes to zero.
Yeah.
$40 billion dollars wiped off the face of the earth.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can kind of have it where it doesn't have decentralized collateral, right? It's like a fiat coin, right? And it's not decentralized, the collateral isn't, but the peg performance is top notch, right? If you just have a bunch of, you know, US treasuries or fiat in a bank account, the peg's never going to wobble, right? I mean, but like you always have to worry about decentralization and things like that. So I didn't know. I don't think the industry kind of really had the idea of like the stablecoin trilemma, but that is, I think, one of the largest challenges, right? If you're trying to get a stablecoin to hundreds of billions of dollars of market cap, and then eventually trillions, right, in the next like 5 to 10 years, then this trilemma is pretty important, right? It's like, what do you do? There hasn't been really a solution. Obviously, we're trying to tackle it in Frax's own unique method, but there hasn't been an objectively agreed upon way to solve this, right? It's like, it's either fiat coins, right? Which, you know, you always have to worry about blacklists or what new regulation might come. And maybe like, you know, holding fiat coins won't be the same depending on what Congress or other countries and things like that pass. And you might have to worry about, you know, being blacklisted or not able to hold it, or you have to try to hold slightly riskier stuff. Hopefully not though, but like as risky as UST, or if you hold like less risky stuff, the peg still wobbles, like LUSD, which wobbles a couple cents around the dollar, right? And so this, I think, is the main challenge. So to answer your question, this has been something that I think is pretty concretely defined in the stablecoin space, but you know, people didn't know about it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago.
Tell us a little bit more about Luna. You mentioned it a little before, and it seemed like everything was going along great until it wasn't. There were a couple really careful eyes that tried to give us some warning signs a little bit ahead of time that there were potentially some flaws in the system, but the exploit window was like so small. It was like the little air shaft on the Death Star. They're like, ah, no, that's no big deal.
It was the heel of Achilles.
Yeah.
A tale as old as
time. Exactly. But it turns out it was a big deal. Was Luna just a flawed system that was doomed to fail, a house of cards just waiting for a wind? Or was this a deliberate attack and an exploit to drop an entire ecosystem that maybe was a competitor? What do you think?
I don't know about the conspiracy theories of like whether it was an attack or them or whoever, but I think it's really important to highlight Frax. Actually, the reason we call ourselves a fractional stablecoin and we named it Frax and stuff like that is our view was that purely algorithmic stablecoins entirely don't work, right? Before we launched Frax, there was this thing called Basis, which they never launched, but their idea was these like other bond tokens and other share tokens. And they basically were one of the leading like algorithmic stablecoin like theories of how like an algo stable should work, right? And the idea with Frax is we have a lot of hard assets. Frax is backed over 92% by literally hard assets, over collateralized loans, kind of like Maker, other stablecoins and things like that.
And when you say hard assets, these are they're still volatile assets, right? Because they're Ethereum, they're, you know,
some of them are other stablecoins, okay. They're protocol controlled liquidity. Some of them are, yeah, Ethereum, which is over collateralized loans, the same way as Maker, right? They're basically a mixture of different kinds of assets, but they're not like they're not just other tokens from the Frax ecosystem, right? Some of it is algorithmic, right? Which is basically that part of the supply that's basically stabilized with FXS and things like that. But it's very small, very, very small. The whole point of Frax is that you can't do this, right? You can't start a stablecoin. You can't start a currency that basically has no exogenous collateral. And I think people kind of wrongly assumed that, you know, because Terra imploded or something, any kind of design that's not either a fiat coin or like entirely over collateralized will like never work, which is clearly not true, right? Frax has never broken its peg even a single time in its existence. And we call ourselves a fractional stablecoin, I think people have thought of it as another algorithmic design, but I want to stress that I think a lot of people, including us, and honestly, I think even the Terra guys towards the end, they knew that, like, look, you can't back something by itself, right?
That's why they started the LFG fund, right?
Exactly. I mean,
they tried to, because their whole system, it was all endogenous collateral, right? Like, you know, the price of Luna, which minted, you know, UST, those were so intricately combined and there was nothing else there. And then they realized, so they raised $10 billion to go make markets essentially, and it just didn't work. It was kind of just out there for anybody to target, right? Anybody with enough money to kind of drain that fund, if you will, by taking them down. And that's kind of what they did. It's pretty sad to see, but has Frax ever been targeted? I know you guys said you never lost your peg, but have you guys ever kind of like fought off an attack?
No, I mean, like, that's the thing. We just assume that everything is always adversarial, right? Like, for example, one of the things that we basically always make sure that our designs and everything can withstand is, like, if every single unlocked, you know, like, Frax stablecoin that's owned by users, right? Like, people that actually want to come and redeem and get a dollar of value from the protocol smart contracts, can they do that? right? And the answer is yes. So like right now, you can actually, you know, don't take my word for it. You could go look at the smart contracts on chain. If every single Frax stablecoin that's owned by users or being staked or something was withdrawn, right? And then they were either sold into the protocol's own liquidity, right? Like the collateral that the protocol has, or redeemed, could all of them get back a dollar value? The answer is yes. And you don't have to trust me, right? The good thing is we don't say, oh, you know, the collateral is like with a market maker, or it's with like...
There's no Celsius or Voyager or BlockFi type of risk where there's rehypothecation.
Exactly.
And all
you don't have to take our word for it, right? Like just, you know,
check the
trust,
chain,
but then verify, right? You could go and take a look. In fact, people did this. In fact, that's why Frax never broke its peg in May, June, and, you know, July during those like crazy weeks and stuff, because people could see it, right? People could say, okay, everything is, you know, going to shit everywhere, right? Do we get out of this thing, or like is everything messed up here? And a lot of people ask that in our community and things like that. And the reason things didn't go bad is one, A, they couldn't go bad mathematically, but then if enough people understood that, right, and they could confirm it on chain, then there doesn't have to be this like crazy panic, right?
Yeah, there can't be a run on the bank, or there doesn't need to be a run on the bank, because you could see the assets, they're publicly verified and attested to by all the different nodes. And so you're not going to have a Lehman Brothers or a Bear Stearns crisis, or even more so kind of as a central bank, you're not going to have a Bank of England sort of, you know, run on the bank or anything, because, you know, people could actually see what's collateralizing the debt.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's like it almost feels like in order to, you know, not have a run, you need to be able to prove that a run can't happen, right?
Right.
And in fact, my own view is like the second that, and this is just general banking in terms of like everything, is like I think the second that it's verifiably clear that there can and there can be a run, like there's like not enough assets to back like liabilities of like either a stablecoin issue or something else, there will be one. Like the probability, mm-hmm. as the market, like that information goes into the market, the probability of a run goes to 100, right? It asymptotically reaches like 100%. And so I think that's why it's really important to be able to actually have these kinds of like on-chain proofs. And like, honestly, I'm actually a pretty big proponent of the regulation that says that stablecoins need to publish their reserves, because we will automatically, like by definition, like Frax complies with every possible regulation of publish, even though there's not an entity, it's like it's decentralized and everything like that. Someone can just publish it in a structure that's like, you know, pings the smart contracts and actually just looks in it and structures it like a balance sheet or something, or whatever the like exact requirements are. But like every single second or every block, right, every 10 seconds, Frax is actually auditable, right? Like the balance sheet is entirely auditable. So I'm actually a pretty big proponent of whenever people ask, oh, what about stablecoin regulations, or are you scared of this or that? Obviously, I'm not a proponent of like restricting things or like banning certain kinds of stable coins, but I'm a very, very big proponent of the reserve disclosure requirements, right? I think that that's required. I think the fiat coins are too, right? Even though it mainly targets them, because like they can't attest to off-chain stuff, but I think they also want greater transparency. And so do we, because we automatically actually comply with it de facto.
Love it. So cool to know the guy who actually built finance the right way, just cruising along no matter what the world throws at you. So with Frax already being a robust economy, is your vision of being a decentralized central bank complete, or do you still have more work ahead of you?
Well, I mean, it's never there's never going to be a time where it's complete. So the main thing is that the way that I look at it is in DeFi and in like a digital economy, there's usually like three fundamental pillars, and everything sounds like a triangle, but it's actually because there's a lot of things that are come in threes. And so I call it the Trinity stack, which in my opinion, it's like stable coins, lending, and liquidity. And Frax right now is the only economy or basically project that has all three of these things in-house, right? If you think about different stable coins or different AMMs or lending markets, they usually have one or maybe two, right? Like, for example, Maker has the stablecoin DAI, right? And then they have their over-collateralized lending system for minting it. So that's two. They don't have like any kind of AMM or swap facility, right? Curve, if you notice recently, they announced their CRV USD stablecoin. So they have a swap facility and an AMM. And now they finally are releasing their second one, right? The CRV USD stablecoin. And same thing with Aave. Aave started out as a lending protocol, one of the largest in DeFi. And recently they announced Go, which is their stablecoin that will work inside of their lending system. So now they have two as well. Frax has Frax stablecoins, Frax Lend, and Frax Swap. So we have all three. And my personal view is that it's going to be very clear that these three things are part of the same stack and part of the same scope. So the larger these blue chip protocols get, the closer they will be in kind of completing this trinity, so to speak. And like lending and stable coins and on-chain swaps, they're all the same thing. And they're not as separate as the early kind of crypto DeFi space would like you to think. In fact, for example, like you don't see people say why Binance is both in the spot swap market, right, as well as the like leverage and lending market, right, and like why does Binance also have BUSD? Why don't they only concentrate on like spot swaps or something, right? Everyone in their mental conceptual framework, they're like Binance, centralized exchange, okay, stablecoin, spot exchange, lending and like leverage and things like that, makes sense. I think that kind of stack also is going to form in like one coherent product or economy on chain. And I think whether, you know, projects know it or not, if they're like, you know, consciously moving towards it or not, it's kind of a law of nature in DeFi that'll kind of congeal into that. And that's what we're seeing with Aave, with Curve, with Frax, with all three already. And we're a little bit ahead of the game, but that doesn't mean we're definitely going to win. We just have to keep shipping and it's never done.
Yeah. How many, actually, I was going to ask something else, but that made me think, like how many people like on a monthly basis are working on the Frax economy? Is it you and a few buddies, or is it being kind of developed in several countries by several different players?
Yeah. Well, the Frax like developer and core team is actually pretty small and lean, but in terms of the community, it's actually very, very huge. So we've given like grants that are voted through governance. People have been working on like dashboards, projects, integrations, and all these things more than I can, you know, even count, right? And so the community is very vibrant. It's across multiple continents. The developers that are working on kind of the Trinity stack and the core products are pretty lean. We're actually growing pretty quickly, but one of our strengths is that Frax actually is quite, you know, profitable in terms of like revenue as a DAO and protocol compared to the costs that it has. I think, you know, Maker, for example, has something like maybe 100, I think they call them core units or like paid contributors or something like that. Frax only has about 8 to 10 of them. And like we literally build and ship all of these things from basically 1/10 the size. Now, obviously, our community is thousands and thousands of people, and then there's tens and hundreds of them building integrations and things like that, dashboards and stuff like that. But the core open source contributors that make a lot of this happen is much more leaner than the, you know, average blue chip protocol like Maker and, you know, other ones. I'd actually love to see some kind of comparison. I think we're in terms of core, people that are paid by like the DAO, it's pretty lean. It's extremely, that's why we've actually been able to be very nimble. Obviously we haven't like cut people because, everyone is extremely, useful and the amount of shipping we do per person I think is probably the highest in the industry, and you see all these things.
That's like a good ratio to track.
Yeah, and like exactly, I'd love to see someone do like an analysis of like the size of DeFi blue chip protocols. I think we'd definitely be up there, if not like pr- probably number one in terms of efficiency.
Yeah. Wow. Crazy. I was going to say, you know, there's lots of different ways to skin the cat. You're doing it a lot differently. What kind of, like, what would you say, like, motivated you to start the whole Frax economy? Like, was there something personal in your life that made you want to go after it? Or was it just, you know, you're a finance and programming wizard and you just needed to have an outlet?
No, I mean, I've been in crypto for like a pretty long time now. And I think that the more I thought about it, right, the more that I realized, like, Bitcoin and fixed supply assets like Ethereum or things like that are more like investments, they're not going to, you know, they're not going to solve crypto's vision of having decentralized currency. They're going to be great investments. They're going to be scarce digital assets. But my personal view, and some people call this like a stablecoin maximalist view, is that the currency of any economy needs to be stable to a standard of living. That's why you know, the dollar is supposed to and always trying to track the CPI, right? That's why that if it's not, right, like currently and in the past years and stuff since the pandemic, people are starting to rightfully be like, yo, you know what the heck, and stuff like that. So I think my views, as they've gotten stronger about currency, the more I've realized we can, with Frax and the entire economy we're building, we can actually solve that part of, you know, crypto's vision and ethos. So it's proving to be more and more correct. And in my opinion, at least, as the more I see the industries, stable coins are becoming a bigger part of crypto, part of finance as a whole. You know, the talk about stable coins and their extremely unique and valuable importance in the industry is growing day in and day out. I think in the next 6 to 12 months, stable coins are going to continue to be more and more relevant. In fact, my own view is that the next generation of stable coins is going to be something like the FPI, which is what we're working on at Frax as well, which is currencies that are on chain. They're non-custodial. They're decentralized, right? And they're not pegged to a national currency unit of account. So they're not pegged to the dollar, the pound, or like the euro or anything, but they're pegged to a basket of consumer items that keep your standard of living the same, because like that's what's important at the end of the day, right? If you think about the US dollar, one way to think about it is like the CPI is the peg, and then the inflation rate is the deviation of like the peg of the US dollar, right? Like how much inflation there is, the more the peg is off, right? So like one way to think about everyone arguing and worried about inflation on Twitter and in the news and stuff is basically pretend the dollar is a stable coin, and then pretend like everyone's tweeting like, oh, it's depegging, or like, why is it off from the peg? Like, the devs, Jerome, do something, Jerome Powell, like, your coin, right? And I think that once people collectively start to think about it like that, they can think, okay, well, why don't we actually release like a completely rethought stable coin that's actually just pegged to the consumer price index, or a basket of consumer items, have that governance on chain, same way that crypto does governance and entirely does it on chain, and peg it to those things rather than the dollar, which is as a proxy pegged to the CPI, basically.
Trippy stuff. Sam, man, there's so many different areas that we can take this. But I think we should wrap here for now. I got like kind of a last closing question. And it's like, out of all the other people that you've developed with and kind of come across, other projects, all that kind of stuff, who's one guy or girl that's really impressed you?
That's a good question. I mean, there's a lot of really impressive people, in crypto, and I think I haven't developed with him personally, but I think something that everyone probably agrees on, or the vast majority of people, is like Vitalik is a really, really good guy. And like in terms of ethos, he really does represent the good of the space. Other people I have you know, developed with or worked integrations with, the Curve devs are always very top notch. They've been in crypto for a long time. Convex, those guys are very long-term oriented. They're absolutely great people. The Olympus DAO guys, they're actually very, very long-term oriented, and they're doing some great things. I think it's important to realize the stuff I personally think about and like look for is positive sum mentality, which is actually not as abundant as people would think. And the idea with positive sum mentality is like, you don't want to think about competition as much or like how to take other people's, you know, piece of the pie. You want to try to think about how to grow the entire size of the pie, right? So that generally wealth and value increases rather than you taking other people's value and like yours maybe like net increases. But the real way to think about how to advance the industry forward, but just everything in the world too, is how to actually create value, because you can create wealth, right? You can create economic productivity. You can create things that are good for everyone, including yourself and your project and things like that. So the, you know, the projects that I personally think embody that, you know, Curve, Convex, Olympus DAO, obviously Vitalik, the original, in my opinion, positive sum guy in the space. And there's quite a few of them, but personally, I always try to live that ethos, especially when doing stuff at Frax and doing partnerships and things like that.
Positive Sum sounds like a great name for a new podcast.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's wrap it.
Absolutely.
Love it. Sam, thank you so much for coming on to the Crypto 101 podcast. Where could people find you online? They want to follow you after this. We'll link it in the show notes, but give a quick shout out to the show.
Yeah, of course. I'm on Twitter and Telegram all the time. Literally, even when I'm working, or everything, I always have a tab of Telegram. Everyone knows how responsive I am, both in the Frax community. And so all of them, Telegram and Twitter, they're just my name, at Sam Kazmian. Also at Frax Finance, both Twitter and Telegram. It's pretty vibrant, huge community. So hope to see you there.
Love it. Thank you so much. Talk soon.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.